Donahue was born in Dublin, Ireland. She is the youngest of eight children. Her father, Dennis Donahue, is a literary critic and the Henry James Professor at NYU. Emma attended Catholic convent schools in Dublin and earned a BA in English and French from University College Dublin. She received a PhD from the University of Cambridge on the concept of friendship between men and women in 18th century English fiction. From age 23, she's earned her living as a writer. She now lives in London, Ontario, with her partner and their young son and daughter. Donahue's first novel was 1994's Stir Fry, a coming-of-age book about a young Irish woman discovering her sexuality. This was followed in 1995 by Hood, about an Irish woman coming to terms with the death of her girlfriend. Hood won the 97 American Library Association's Gay, Lesbian, and Bisexual Book Award for Literature. Slammerkin was a historical novel set in London and Wales. More novels followed, but it was her 2010 novel Room that became an international bestseller. Room was narrated by a 5-year-old called Jack, who lived in a single room with his ma and had never been outside. Room was shortlisted for the Man Booker and Orange Prize and was one of my favorite books of the year. You'll find the preview on bookreportradio.com, archived shows, week of November 27th, 2010. We'll speak to Emma today about her new work, Astray. Emma, it's so great to have you with us here today at the Book Report.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I want to say from the get-go that Room was probably one of my favorite books of the decade. I loved it.
I'm so glad because, you know, it's not an easy book to delve into at first because it has such an off-putting premise. So I think it's only sold in the numbers it has because individuals have been forcing their friends to read it.
I told everyone they had to pick it up. What was your inspiration for this book, Astray, a collection of stories?
Well, the stories were written one at a time over about 15 years, but they're all about life-changing journeys. So they're all about either emigration from Ireland or Britain to America or Canada, or about long journeys within North America, like, you know, gold miners or prospectors. So I think really what triggered it is that I emigrated twice myself. I left Dublin at 20 and I moved to England for 8 years and then I moved to Canada. So I've been through this twice now and I'm sort of fascinated by the subtle ways it changes you to settle in a new place. Even if that's not a tremendously different culture, you still feel slightly off balance, slightly odd, slightly strange, you know?
Mm. In Room, readers cared so much for Jack and his mother. You had wonderful pages to build that kind of bond. In Astray, you chose a short story format, so readers perhaps don't have that kind of attachment. How does that affect how you write the book?
You have to move fast with the short story. You have to hook the readers very quickly. Yeah. And often it'll be a strange setting to them, especially if your work is set in previous centuries. So, you know, if it's 18th century New York, I need to hook my readers right away. And sometimes one way to do that is to emphasize the things which still are the same. So, for instance, one of the stories set in 1735 in New York, I start with a kind of a Starbucks moment of my lawyer character sitting in a cafe, having his coffee and watching the world go by and reading the paper, you know. So sometimes you choose to emphasize what's the same rather than what's different. And other times you start with some, you know, peculiarity of the times. But most of all, you want them to care about your characters and to care about things which are completely timeless. And luckily, many of my characters are in life or death situations. Because I find that when I'm finding historical moments to write about, to do with travel, say, it's never just travel. They're traveling because, you know, a little girl is being fostered out because her mother can't afford to raise her, or, you know, a gang of crooks decide to hold Abraham Lincoln's body to ransom. So, you know, they all have big dramatic reasons to go on their journeys.
I wanted to ask you, I know about the orphan trains through another book that was Laura Moriarty's book, The Chaperone, which is actually about Louise Brooks. But then the heroine, if you will, was put on an orphan train herself. How did you find out about those?
Well, I'm very interested in all the forms of travel which are really life-changing. So not sort of casual tourism, but I'm especially interested in people ending up a long way from home without ever having chosen it. So, for instance, I've got one short story about a German teenager, a boy, sent out by his prince as a mercenary to fight for the British side during the American Revolution. And, you know, even though he was called a mercenary, nobody was paying him. He just about got his dinner. So these kind of helpless moments interest me. And similarly with the orphan trains, as soon as I heard about it, I thought, oh, that's fascinating, the idea that there was this huge kind of migration movement, but none of these people chose to go. They were just shipped off like packages, you know?
Yes.
Tell us more about the Abraham Lincoln story. I never heard about that, and I'm a student of American history.
This crazy gang of counterfeiters, they basically, one of their number, the one who did the really good bogus money, as they called it, he was in jail, and they decided that they could get him out by ransoming him against, you know, swapping him for something really valuable. And they thought they would dig up Abraham Lincoln's body, you know, prize it out of the marble tomb. And they got as far as smashing the tomb open, and then they had to run because they had been infiltrated. So I tell their story from the point of view of the Secret Service man who had infiltrated the group. And I've never done a kind of a classic, you know, quarrels among thieves kind of story before. So I really, with this book, I really enjoyed trying some new genres. Again, I've never done kind of, you know, Western stories to do with the kind of gold mining or cowboy lifestyle. So it was wonderful having to research 14 different mini worlds, you know.
And these are all true stories, based on true stories. So how did you make your selection?
Well, you know, I think I probably found about 40 different ideas, you know, historical incidents that could have been the subject of stories. And then I narrowed it down to 14 in the end because, you know, a historical incident can be interesting, but still not particularly suited to a short story, because sometimes people have written about it perfectly well in a more traditional history form, or sometimes it would be just the incident might be too unrelievedly sad. Sometimes I couldn't find my way in, you know, find a fresh angle on it or any kind of twist. So, you know, not every interesting bit of history makes a good story. So I had to be really selective.
One of the stories is about Caroline, who had a connection to Charles Dickens. Talk about that.
I'm a huge fan of Charles Dickens. And what many people don't know is that he was, in his charitable donations, he was very keen on helping women get out of the sex trade. He was very non-judgmental. He thought if somebody wanted to start again and give up being a prostitute, then good luck to her. So this particular woman and her brother, he helped them move to Canada for a fresh start. And what fascinated me about that story was the idea that by moving to another country, you could literally change your name, you know, completely erase your past. And this woman had a small child. And I thought, how interesting that, you know, at the end of the story, you know, once Dickens helped her to move to Canada, she drops off the record. And I'm sure she changed her name. And that's exactly what she wanted. She wanted just to be able to draw a line and say, I'll start all over again somewhere that nobody knows me. So that's one of the great pleasures of emigration. Bit harder to do nowadays with the internet. It's in a way harder to get away from your own history. But I think 100 years ago, yes, it was much more possible to, in a way, have more than one life because you could more easily escape from what people knew about you.
And I was very struck by how poignant the brother-sister relationship was.
Well, one thing I love about using historical sources is that it gives you material that's more sort of rough-edged and odd. So, for instance, if you just chose to write a short story about a woman trying to get out of prostitution, you might think to give her a child, but you wouldn't think to give her a live-in younger brother, you know? Or once when I did a novel about a Victorian divorce case, my novel was called The Sealed Letter. And again, if I'd been just making up a story of a Victorian wife who was adulterous, I would probably have given her one great lover. But this woman was carrying on with two of her husband's colleagues in an overlapping way. And I remember thinking, I would never have made that up. So that's what I love about these real sources. You know, they are genuinely odd.
Innistray, was there one favorite story that you hold in your heart?
It's hard to choose, but the story I open with, the one about Jumbo the Elephant, I really enjoyed because Jumbo the Elephant is probably the best known character in the book, in that he, when the London Zoological Society sold him to Barnum Circus, you know, he became very well known as, you know, the biggest land animal in captivity. But what intrigued me was that he and his captor were incredibly close for about 20 years, and his keeper. Matthew Scott used to literally spend every evening sitting in Jumbo's stall drinking whiskey with the elephant. Not best practices nowadays, but it seemed to work for them. So I decided to tell that story, you know, that my angle in would be to have it spoken by Matthew Scott to Jumbo. So it's a very sort of close, chatty monologue from the man to the elephant. And so that gave me a whole new angle on the Jumbo story.
Well, I have to tell you that in Africa, elephants are known for eating the berries of the amarula tree, which, of course, is a very popular liqueur. So I think, you know, elephants, liqueur, it has happened before.
I know that. That's fascinating.
So what's next for you?
Well, I'm working hard on my next novel, which will be my first crime novel. It's about a murder that happened in San Francisco in 1876. A woman was shot through a window, and the case has never been solved, and I'm fascinated by it. So the story is full of French-speaking lowlifes.
Mm, and it's based on a true story.
Absolutely, yes. It's making extra work for me to have to do all this research before I start the books, but I can't help it. I just get hooked by these real stories.
Mm-hmm. And are there talks about Room being made into a film?
Yes, there's a lot of interest, and I'm beginning to talk to filmmakers, and yes, I hope it will happen, because I think this is the one of my books that I can really see working on the screen.
Well, thanks very much, Emma. I mean, I enjoyed reading this book, and I'm thrilled to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.